Welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast. Breaking through the political noise, separating fact from fiction. From the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system. Here is your host, Devin Nunes.
Welcome back to a special edition of the Devin Nunes Podcast. There is so much misinformation out there and disinformation. No one knows what to believe anymore. That's why normally I bring you a podcast every Friday. But because Congress is not in session, everybody is quarantined to their home, I had some extra time. Last week, I heard Dr. Centeno on Dan Bongino's show, and I sent that interview out to a lot of you. But I have the great honor and privilege to track down Dr. Centeno, and he agreed to come on my podcast because I had a couple very specific questions for him that I think will be helpful for all of you who are trying to deal with the current situation dealing with the coronavirus. So Dr. Centeno works with Regenix. He works out of Boulder, Colorado and all over the globe, and he specializes in stem cell research. But he also has a blog that you can go to at Regenix.com, and we'll have him get into that in a little bit. But Dr. Centeno, welcome to the show. I really appreciate you coming on.
Well, thank you, Devin. Thank you for having me, and happy to answer any questions that you have.
I thought you were very calm. You had a lot of really good information on Dan's show. And then it kind of dawned on me that, you know, one of the problems that we have out there is everybody's running around like a madman looking for a test. But the reality is, whether you test positive or not, if you're sick, we need to know what are the symptoms and are there different symptoms for different age groups? Because a lot of folks are saying, you know, that just anecdotally that children may get it and may carry it. Adults may just get some aches and a high fever. Older folks with respiratory issues, there's different things that happen. Can you just walk our listeners through what are the symptoms and then what are the known remedies and treatments that we know of right now that are useful to do in that time period between the time that you think you might be coming down with something, that you get a hold of your doctor, and then get an actual test. So why don't we start, Doc, with is there any good data out there about what the symptoms are for different age groups?
So if we look right now, I think the first thing to realize is about half the people that come down with this may not even know that they had it. So they might just get some fevers, chills, aches, sniffles, and then it kind of goes away. So then you've got another 30% who get sick, who feel like they have the flu, that's joint aches, and it's a bad flu. And so what does that look like, that 30%? You know, generally what you tend to see and what's been reported is a dry cough and fever are the two most common things that go hand in hand. Now, it's less likely that if stuffy nose or if you have a runny nose, that that's coronavirus. It's not impossible, but it's less likely. Another symptom that seems to be more widely reported, not as wide as cough and fever, is kind of GI upset, nausea, vomiting, that kind of stuff early on. And then, you know, for that other 20% that gets sicker, and that would tend to be older people. So again, anyone at any age can get this, but generally now we're talking about people in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and up. That 20% gets sicker. And if they're in their 50s and 60s, they generally have some other type of medical condition. And for that crew of that 20%, they may need to go into the hospital or seek hospitalization. They might need to get put on some oxygen. And generally, the kind of symptoms there are different. Now this thing kind of develops into, it's hard to get up and get out of bed. You find yourself getting out of breath or feeling short of breath. You just don't have energy to walk across the room, and all of that feels difficult, just like if you're at high altitude. And those are all symptoms of not being able to exchange enough oxygen because you're starting to get a viral pneumonia. And about 3 or 4% of patients would require more significant care than just getting put on some oxygen in the hospital, and they would require ICU care. And that kind of care is possibly the use of a ventilator. And if you get ventilated, meaning they put you on a ventilator, something is breathing for you. The good news is, as long as the medical care system holds out, the overall fatality rate is generally less than 1%. But the bad news is, obviously, if that system gets swamped, then you have problems. But that's generally how this kind of plays out there. And
I don't want to be repetitive here, but just for my listeners. So this is the data that you're looking at that's available through CDC, right? I mean, you're looking at South Korea, the experience there. I assume you trust that data for the most part.
Yeah, it's a couple of different data sets reported. And the problem with looking at all that data with regard to fatalities has to do with the fact that it generally magnifies fatalities because early on in an outbreak, you're not testing everyone, especially in an outbreak with a disease where 50% of the people just get mild symptoms. Those people aren't going in and getting tested. So that tends to magnify everything. But if you look at that information, yeah, South Korea is about a 0.7%. Germany's right now clocking in about 0.2%. And then if you look at other data sets like the Princess Cruise, that was about 1%. And again, the people that tend to be perishing from this are older, usually 70 and older, and usually have a significant number of other problems like emphysema on top of that, or they have diabetes.
Right, the underlying condition. So I want to go back to that, the 50%, that people that, because, you know, probably a lot of people, you know, they get a little sniffle or they get a little sore throat or they get a high fever, you know, they may think that they have it. Well, what are those symptoms in that 50%, you know, people that don't even know they have it or people that just get, because we've heard a lot of people saying, oh, I just had a fever for a day or two. Is that some of the symptoms that you're seeing?
Yeah, so fever for a day or two is in that 50%. When I say they may not know they have had it, there was one woman, for instance, on that Princess Cruise who was in her 70s who reported simply that she just had a couple hours of fever and chills, and then that was it. But there is some interesting information just coming out now. And what it's saying is do not take nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, but instead take Tylenol. So nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs are things like Motrin, Aleve, that you can buy at the grocery store,
ibuprofen, right?
Correct. And their concern is they're seeing some relationship between people that took a lot of these NSAIDs and a worse course of the disease. And they're thinking that those drugs are inhibiting the immune system's ability to get rid of the virus. So definitely this is a Tylenol only, and don't go buy any ibuprofen for this one.
Well, that is very valuable information. What's the best way to immediately treat the symptoms that you might have? So that's I think that's really key, doctor, that people need to know, because, you know, a lot of people might just have ibuprofen laying around, Advil or whatever, and take it. But early evidence shows that you really want to focus on taking Tylenol to bring your fever down.
Correct. And the fever limit for this one, just so that you know, per the CDC is 100.4. That's where they consider that you have a fever that might require testing if you've also had a dry cough. So you should take your temperature, and obviously if it's 100 or 99, then you're not in that realm, but if it's 101, then you are.
So let's say that you had that, let's say you had a little dry cough and you had a little temperature, you don't really remember what it was a month ago. If you go in, you feel fine today, they're obviously not going to test you. But even if you did get the test, would you show up positive? Does the test know whether or not you had it in the past?
Yeah, so they are looking for active virus or the RNA associated with the virus. So what that means for these tests is that generally the person will be cleared after about 14 days. So if you had something a month ago that was this, you might have antibodies, but it's unlikely that you would have active virus in your system. So you would likely test negative. That's why it's a 14-day quarantine time. And they want you to get out of quarantine to have at least two negative tests.
So 100.4 is really the magic number. If you're 101 or more with a dry cough, you probably need to call the doctor in your area, because every area, region of the country is different. I know my hospitals around here are asking if you come down with those symptoms, don't just run into the emergency room. They've set up different triage centers where they'd rather have you go through, just because it appears to be very, very contagious. And you would agree with that, right, doctor, that this does seem to be a very contagious virus, although as of right now, knock on wood, not deadly, not very deadly.
Yeah, it's hard to say how contagious it really is. So there's two camps on that. One camp is If you look at the Princess Cruise data, that was 4,000 people leaving from Wuhan, China. Over a month, they tested everyone on that boat. So 17% got it over that month. And they didn't really quarantine until the very end. So if you look at that, you're saying to yourself, 17% over a month, you would think that most of the ship would have had it by that time. Then there's another study out which claims that it's got a very high infectivity. So, you know, I don't think we really know yet, but I think, you know, practicing all the things being discussed by the Trump administration and the CDC are critical, which is the social distancing, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we talked about Tylenol to bring the fever down. We talked about what the fever would need to be, where you might be in a danger zone of needing to get tested. What other treatments are proven to work that you could, home remedies that you could use initially if you had to wait to get into the doctor? Let's talk about that first.
Yeah, there's some thoughts that zinc might impact the flu. So there's obviously quite a bit of, or viruses, so there's quite a few zinc products out there that you can take. There's some early information. I guess there's a clinical trial going on right now in Toronto on the use of quercetin. Quercetin is a supplement that you can buy at a health food store that it might reduce viral loads. So those are the two things I've seen that are commonly being used for good health. But really the most common sense things are, especially if you're home with this thing and you're not working or you're working remotely, this is a good time to really load up on your sleep. There's nothing like sleep for improving your immune system. Take care of yourself, eat a good diet, exercise, all of those things, those common sense things that we might not do because we're so freaked out about this thing. This is a great time to maybe take some melatonin at night to get yourself to sleep so you don't keep running this through your head.
Or just listen to the Devin Nunes podcast, Doc. That's what my kids do. They listen to it. They put them right to sleep.
So there you go.
There's been some talk recently in the news about a vaccination. They sped up the time possibly that a vaccine may work. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so there is a vaccination trial going on in Seattle as we speak. They just started enrolling, I think, their first patient yesterday. Now, how quickly that's going to move through is going to be interesting to see. You're going to have to have at least a couple months of data in a hot spot like Seattle to be able to say this is probably working. So that's the difficulty there. Is the good news is they got to skip animal trials altogether, which would have set this thing back 3, 4, 5 months. And it was pushed forward through by the Trump administration, through the FDA at record time. But the problem is it's probably still a few months away before they absolutely know if it's working or not.
Right. So they would have to test it. And then the idea that, and I heard you talk on Dan Bongino's podcast, I thought it was really valuable information about why there's some thought out there that heat can damage and destroy the virus. Can you walk us through that theory?
Yeah, so there's a couple things to understand there. Transmission of the virus, it happens two ways. One is through aerosolized droplets, just like the flu. So that's when you cough, you put out these little small droplets. Sometimes you can see them, many times you can't. And then the other thing that can happen with this, they believe, no one's 100% sure yet, is surface contact. Now, for both of those transmission methods, as the temperatures go up, those become less efficient methods of transferring the virus from person to person. A good example would be, let's say, a steel rail outside in a park. You know, someone touches it that has this, they had something on their hands, and normally, under normal circumstances, that might last a day there, being able to infect somebody. But when the temperatures go up and that steel rail, because it's baking in the sun, especially in California, gets to be 120 degrees, the viruses last minutes at that temperature.
There's no virus that can last in that temperature.
So no, 56 degrees is just a few minutes, and 56 degrees centigrade, again, about 120, 130 degrees, which is what those handrails are going to be pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. So what if most it's springtime, say it's 60 degrees outside, but of course in the sunlight, you know, I don't think it gets up to 120 degrees, but let's say it heats up, around 90 or 100. that will just take a little bit longer, but it's not going to live for days on the outside, right?
Correct. It's not. So the longest surface for this particular virus was plastic, and that was about 2 days. For other surfaces, it was less. And then the least surface, or the hardest one for this, or any virus, coronavirus like this, to survive on was actually porous surfaces like cardboard. So I just got a bunch of Amazon stuff. There's a lot of people ordering stuff from Amazon. Those things come to your front door. Those are the least of your worries, because for some reason it's very hard for virus to survive on paper and cardboard like that. But wash your hands after you get your packages, but that's going to be the hardest place.
And the plastic surface that you mentioned that lasted the longest, what was the temperature?
Yeah, they're talking about room temperature. So really temperature in the high 60s, low 70s. So we're talking about, you know, the average temperature of an air-conditioned room.
Okay, roger that. And then everybody's out buying all sorts of hand sanitizer, wiping everything down. Do you have any advice on what's the best way to clean your table, clean your door handles? What's the best way to do that?
The current recommendation is 60% alcohol content or more. So if you look at most hand sanitizers, they're at 60%. Most medical ones in medical clinics are 70% alcohol. So this is alcohol content. So when you look at that hand sanitizer to purchase, if you can find some these days, make sure that it's above that 60% area. Now, you can also make your own if you just buy some aloe vera gel and you put in 99% rubbing alcohol, 2 to 1, 2 alcohol to 1 part aloe vera gel, you'll end up at around 66%. And that's more than enough and works just fine.
Well, that is very helpful, Dr. Centano. How do you get to, what is your the website, and for folks that want to read your blog that I found very informative, you're kind of going into some detail about some trial studies that are going on. How do people find that?
Yeah, that's regenxx.com. So it's R-E-G-E-N-E-X-X. So regenx. So R-E-G-E-N-E-X-X, two X's at the end.com. You can just go to the blog from that page. And then I'm trying to blog on this about every other day. As an example, this morning, I was just talking about how, you know, the good news is that the fatality rates are staying low in those countries that are keeping it under control. The bad news is, obviously, we need to pray for everyone in Italy, because that is not a good situation over there.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for keeping everyone up to speed on this, Doc. And you know, one of the challenges, just to finish up here on the last topic, is that we have this panic that's going on where you have folks that are going out to grocery stores and they're standing outside waiting to get into the grocery store. You know, yesterday here in California, it was a little cold and rainy and windy. You know, and you had all sorts of people, you know, all ages, including older ages, you know, standing there. Then they're rushing into the store. Stores are getting wiped out. And I continue to go out and say, look, there's no food shortage in the country. You don't have to get in a hurry to go buy stuff. You don't have to hoard stuff. But the strangest thing of all that nobody can understand, and maybe you can help us understand, you know, you already know where this is going. Why are people buying toilet paper? What does toilet paper do to get rid of this?
I have a theory about that. And my wife actually is the one that instructed me that for women, it's a must have, whereas for men, it's a, if you didn't have toilet paper, your life, your world wouldn't be rocked too hard. So maybe that's part of it. But yeah, listen, I mean, during wartime Great Britain, when Winston Churchill was in charge over there, they had those signs that we now see every place, keep calm and carry on. Those are World War II signs. They were all over London. They were posters. The concept was the government needed to get people to do certain things, but they couldn't instill a panic. So we're in that same world right now. We can't instill a panic, causing things like panic buying. We have to keep calm and carry on. So those are coffee mugs all over the place now. So if you see one of those, think about it and you know, take that advice.
Take it to heart. Well, Dr. Centano, thank you so much for coming on the show. This is very, very helpful and very, very timely. This is Devin Nunes. We'll have another podcast on Friday, but thank you for listening to this special edition of the podcast on the coronavirus.
Thanks for listening to the Devin Nunes podcast. We invite you to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And remember, you can download this podcast on iTunes or at devinnunes.com.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness is
started wondering if every road dead ends our dreams. It whips the dust up and rains pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We've started wondering if we even matter at all. We'll take that hard road to happier days. Trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard work and family can fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take that hard road to happier days. We're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days. Cause we've kept our American faith.
Paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.